Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, Aramaic Friday, May the 23rd, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart. It's an honor and a privilege to have each of you with us, and especially Dale coming to join us. I know he's been all over creation this last several days. We've been trying to catch up with him and see his tags on Facebook, and he's here and he's there and he's having dinner there. And it's awesome to watch what you're doing, Dale, to see how you're reaching out and touching the world and touching the game. And as we tap into this Aramaic Friday and that most amazing language, Aramaic, that expresses things that just on a daily basis I start to understand and comprehend more and more. And what's still in the Aramaic that we don't know yet, I don't know, but I sure do look forward to it as it unfolds. I had a particular piece unfold this morning. I was talking and processing with someone this morning, and that scriptural quote that says, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues of life. And that, you know, we've shared before in the show that we couldn't even translate that word heart in the West up until just a few decades ago because we had no idea of the unconscious. And that the picture world that we see, the realities that we see, are a product of what's resonating throughout our structure from 1,000 generations. And when they talked about, you know, the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years and the way to get out of the desert was, and the desert is just another code word for the unconscious, the way to function consciously is, they said, the old generation had to die off, which didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die, but rather the root of the word generation is genari, which means cause. All of the old causes held within the mind had to be removed, had to be forgiven. The old causes had to die off in us. And this morning as I was processing with someone, and I'd like to tie this in, Dale, with the whole conversation today and where your writing's going, and just as you've been sharing with me the new insights and such that you've been getting, that, you know, just where those things come from and where the vision goes. But I was given a visual this morning in processing with someone of the vertically stacked generational influence in our lives. And if you'd imagine that, you know, we've got these boxes, each one being a life, that, you know, we've all heard the statement, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Well, we're standing on the shoulders sometimes of giants and sometimes of the lowest order, and not so gigantic, but rather the rage-filled, the grief-filled, the pain-filled. And so the visual, the impact I was given was that our generations are like this set of vertical boxes, all the generations stacked, and out of those generational influences comes the picture world, the world we see that comes out of carbon-based memory. And, you know, if a particular situation resonates something that happened to, let's go back, grandfather 30 generations ago, then his mind, his way of perceiving becomes one of the boxes out of which our picture world comes. And then there was grandmother 10 generations ago and grandfather 4 generations ago. And my 4-year-old experience that came out of those experiences go into the perceptual output of my mind, the picture world that I get to see. And out of my heart come the issues I need to deal with. Most of us think that the picture world we see is a picture of what's going on out there and have no clue that it's a picture world that comes from what's in here, from these vertically stacked generations, and that our task is, you know, when Yeshua said the first law was you must have rachma, our task was to open that filter in the mind that allowed love to go in and fill each of those vertically stacked boxes. And, you know, a couple of years ago, Jeannie had her computer with her in class down at the Heart Center, and I was talking about the generational influence, and so she went back and she did the math on 100 generations. And when you think about what you're standing on the shoulders of, when you think about these vertically stacked boxes, 100 generations, and I may not have the number accurately, but at this level it really doesn't matter how accurate or inaccurate it is. The number's so huge. But in 100 generations, the number of stacked boxes you have underneath your perception is approximately 5,284 to the 90th power. That's how many people are in 100 generations of your bloodline. And that when those generations stack up and whew, up comes this picture world, we think the picture world that comes from those generations is what's actually happening out there. And we totally miss the experience of the presence of the active love of the Creator that is there for us. Because we're feeling and we think we're thinking, but we're really just playing out those generational images. The old generation has to die off in order for you to move to the level of true creation. And what's it going to look like when 7.5 billion people get those boxes all lined up and repaired with the active presence of love? We bring that active presence of love that we were created to be, and if you forget who you are, if your image of yourself comes from those stacked boxes, it may not be so pretty, but hold a newborn child. The newborn child is coming into one of these devices with all of these vertically stacked boxes. And if we teach them to get lost in that, then they'll think that's who they are. But what will it look like when 7.5 billion people have aligned and healed the content of every one of those generations and actually incarnate, hold a newborn child, incarnate that newborn childness, incarnate that awesome active presence of love? What will we be creating? What will the game look like? The ancient scriptures say, the mind of man has not yet conceived of what lies in store. This isn't a religious journey. It's a journey of incarnating human life and the awesome possibilities of it. So, Dale, I'd love to have your thoughts and your input on that topic. How do you be, sir?
How are you doing?
I am well. I'm rocking. We're up in the cold, rainy northwest in Oregon, but that's okay.
Beautiful. I just got back, literally just got back into Asheville a couple of minutes ago, and I had Loretta drop me off on the far end of a park that I'm walking to the other side, and I was like trying to briskly get past all the traffic that I was next to get away from all the noise, so I'm a little short of breath. But you know, it's really all about vibration and frequency, isn't it? It started by obviously the work I did with you, but looking into sound healing and started looking at what Stephen Halpern or Jonathan Golden and all these different guys were doing. And it started really resonating. It started making a lot of sense how there's certain frequencies that, exactly as you say, build the system up, and there's certain ones that break it down. And still trying to get my breath back. it's an interesting thing for me, even just in whatever normal means. I don't know if there's much normal about what I do, but even just one of my sort of everyday talks, to see that look in people's eyes of panic. And it doesn't always happen, but it's one of those things that I realize that, of course, it's not even really about what I'm saying. It's about what's resonating inside of them. And knowing that that's the moment when, at least for me, when the rubber hits the road, it's like, can I hold the space for this person right now? And can I actually be in that active space of love that I'm talking about? And, of course, when you're in front of hundreds of people, sometimes that's a little easier to do. Sometimes it's not. But for me, the great challenge has always been when I came back home. And it's always been with the children, because regardless of however many hundreds of people were listening to me speak, you know, during any particular time period, it's when I get back home and, you know, Mikey, who's now almost 13, comes up and has some sort of a problem, or maybe Mikey and Lucinda are doing that amazing thing that teenagers do, where they're not exactly loving each other and screaming their heads off. Yeah, I mean, I still remember, even when Loretta was pregnant with our first, Lucinda, who's going to be 15 on Monday, I still remember you saying, and this was down in, I hadn't seen you in about a year or so, and it was down in Clearwater, Florida, and you said, you know, anything you haven't dealt with up to this point, you're about to see it in full living color and Dolby sound. And I went, huh, what?
opportunities to unstack your boxes, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, and it truly, literally is. It's like watching your heart walk around in someone else's body. And then when you've got three of them, and that's, of course, an interesting dynamic, too, because we were just in Charlotte, North Carolina last night, and Loretta and I were going to a comedy show, which we rarely, I've been so busy lately, we rarely get to do stuff like that, and we were leaving the room right at the point when all three of the kids were, their stuff was up. And it's so beautiful because Loretta and I, it intrigues me because it's like the things don't hook us like they used to. Some things do still, of course, hook us. But what's interesting is I see a lot of people, and what they'll do is they'll detach from their children. And what I mean by detach is it's that westernized version of Buddhism where they don't even know what it even means in Buddhism, probably, but where they, it's like they just don't feel. What they'll do is they'll lock everything down, lock the whole system down, don't let yourself feel what you're feeling, don't let them resonate anything, and lock it down. Like you would say, polish the outside of the cup. And that's an interesting thing because you
drink a fifth of scotch.
Oh, yeah. And you see the rage in their eyes. You see it in the checkout lane in the grocery store and the kids screaming for candy. And I don't buy my kids anything in the checkout lane because of that reason. I never have, I never will. Because once you do it, you put the root in there. Now, it's interesting that some people will think, from the outside looking in, that, of course, what they're doing is, okay, let bygones be bygones. Just cut it off the hook and just ignore your feelings, and everything just goes away and you feel at peace. And I'm like, oh, no. This is exactly the opposite of that. This isn't about denying. This is about stepping into the heart. And, of course, that heart, Liba in Aramaic, is that place where thought and feeling merge together. And your thoughts and your emotions are connected together. Your thoughts and your feelings are connected together. And it's about actually getting in and accessing that and removing what it is that's keeping you out of the present moment that's resonating right now. So rather than denying that, you're actually going in and removing the root of what's causing that suffering in the first place. And it's an interesting thing, even in, like in doing the worksheet process, of course, I know you've never heard this before, where people say, okay, hold on a second, so you're telling me to cancel my goal for what I want in the moment? Then what's the point of this? Because my goal was that I wanted peace. And it's like, ah, yeah, but you see what's happening is if you're not willing to feel what you're feeling, which may be the exact opposite of what peace looks like, you're not going to get to the true peace. You're just going to get to a carbon copy, which isn't actually peace. It's just the cessation of conflict. It means that your lid's on tight enough on the pressure cooker that you don't have to worry about it. But then when the heat comes up again, because you haven't dealt with it, and the heat gets up and it gets more and more intense, the top is going to pop on that pressure cooker, and then, of course, all HE double hockey sticks breaks loose, and then we say, I have no peace in my life. And that's the thing. If we could just get that into the consciousness, I mean, that's what's so inspiring about living my life in this way and sharing this with people, is just getting that into their consciousness, that it's not about turning away. It's actually about going directly in, but being willing to feel it and understanding, you know, in your words, willingness is the cosmic grease, and all of my suffering is in 100% direct proportion to my resistance to feeling whatever's resonating in this moment. I got a lot of trucks around me. I'm trying to move away from the road again here, but
that's right. You're coming through loud and clear. You're loud and clear. There's
good.
No problem with that.
And if we could just get that it's not about the turning away, but of course that's the conditioning, that's the programming. I hear people all the time, like in your events, like at Why Again, and I always sit in the back of the room, and I love to survey the room. I used to say that, it wasn't the first time, it was because that way I could make a quick escape. But now it's like I like to sit in the back, and it's sort of, if I was sitting in the front, I think I would probably leap up and push you to the side and say, I got something to say too. But it's great to be in the back of the room because I can see the dialogue between different people, and you can feel the energy in the room. And you can feel people a lot of times, the ones that are just constantly shaking their head, no, 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 no. And some will walk out the door and they're still shaking their head no without actually trying it, putting the pen on the paper. But then it's such a beautiful experience to be there and seeing those ones that are saying no, 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 no. And then at some point they actually do the process and they actually put it into practice. And then all of a sudden they're going, oh, my God. Like this, the slightest little microsecond of an opening, but it's all it takes. And they finally start realizing, hey, wait a second. I've been running away from the very thing that actually is what I should have been embracing, and that's what the heart's all about. And it is very true. I've been saying it more than ever lately that really a lot of the deepest nuance of what was written down, quoted, attributed to Yeshua in Aramaic, I don't really even think we really could have properly fully translated it until just the last 30 years or so. And it's the other thing, too, that keeps me coming back to Siddhuk Damar Shamoon and what ended up going into the Kabbalist Enlightenment work, because it's like the only literally fully high fidelity translation that I've still to this point that I've ever found, and it's been the benchmark of excellence, so to speak, and understanding that, you know, if I'm translating something, if there's still a question mark over what it is that I'm translating, then it means my work is not done. I can say that whatever, Teshbukta means glory, but what does that actually mean? And it's those kinds of things, like when I was a kid, they would say, well, you got to take that on faith. And I'd go, okay, what's faith? And they'd go, well, you got to take that on faith too, which means shut up, kid. And it's what it's all about. And that's the thing. It's like it's a combination of not only, it's not even really translation for me. It's like the translations or those words on the page are an entry point to my own psyche, to my own soul, my own napsha, the breath of my own life, and understanding that with each little awakening that happens with me through my work, that's one more awakening for everyone who I share that with. And what an awesome way to live a life. It's just amazing to live in such a way and be out there face-to-face with all these beautiful souls who are waking up just the same as I am.
That is powerful, and certainly, you know, one of the things that inspires me to keep moving forward with, you know, what we've come to comprehend, and there's been no translation work happened with the Kabbalists since the 1970s. You know, the project ran out of money, it was put on the shelf, and then when it was handed over to me, I took it down off the shelf and working toward putting together a group of people to do the next level of the translation. And what we know yet that's in there when translated at depth, what of course we've got plenty to work on by cleaning up our own hearts, our own unconscious minds, that process. But then what comes next? And, you know, what I was thinking of, the folks I was talking to this morning, I actually just finished breathing them, doing a still point session, and left them in still point to come and do the show. And I was contemplating, having been given this visual of these vertically stacked boxes being the generations of when they're cleaned out, when they're aligned with love, you know, it's just like, what's the game going to look like, you know? When 7.5 billion people actually, rather than function out of their rage and their guilt and their grief and their fear and their terror and their trauma and their war and their pain and their generational murderous attitudes, rather than that, what are we going to create? What's it going to look like when active love is what incarnates and interacts in every interaction? What's it going to look like when, you know, George Bush or Obama and Putin get together and they're functioning as human beings, as the active presence of love? What's the game going to look like? And to me, that's what we're working toward.
You know, I'm so excited about the younger ones that come to my events. I talk about them a lot, the teenagers into the 20-somethings. Actually, I was just in Kalamazoo, Michigan last Sunday, and during my Sunday talk, there was a girl. I don't know how old she was. I remember her name was Sam. She was to my left, right in the front row, and I would say all these, you know, like ask certain questions, and she would just be like immediate. She would pop right out with the answer. She might have been like 14, 15, and it excites me so much because I don't feel those sort of structures of comfort and all that religious framework and all the ideologies and that sort of the World War II mentality of the weird, like, between the difference between, say, something like, you know, being so happy, thankful, and grateful that you're in a country that, you know, celebrates, you know, a wide extent of what we would call freedom, as opposed to that odd patriotism that, you know, in the words of Sinclair Lewis, is wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross. And just being those, they're literally, it's almost like they're coming in to be more willing to be just open and not add too much into the system, but just to realize that it's all about being that open, clear resonance and open, clear, pure energy that they already are, and that there's no actual information. There's nothing they need to seek or somehow add into that system that will make them more complete or whole or more beautifully functioning than they already are, but it's actually about keeping the system pure, and it's about, you know, it's like the whole idea that you say of, you know, just because you have a headache does not necessarily mean that your brain, your body lacks aspirin. And that's kind of the new, I'm saying it's a new process of thinking, but it really it's not. It's like the now process in thinking. We've come for thousands and thousands of years of humanity to this point right now, when it's like, wow. You know, when people say, you know, if you could live at any point in time, would you want to go back to the time of Yeshua? And I'm like, well, that would be nice and all, but no, I'm here. You know, I'm here right now in this moment. What more amazing moment this could there possibly be than now? I mean, literally, if you just look at the openness, and it does say that, it's like, as you mentioned earlier, you know, the older generation has to die off, and those older ideas, those older ideologies. And I think in some ways with some people that just can't let go of that frame that they're holding on to, they just can't let go of the shoreline because of those older ideas, maybe, you know, physically, that there's certain physical beings that have to pass. And that's what's going to happen is it's not even really that the physical beings need to pass, but it's just those old energies. And if we could just realize that, and the young ones, they just have it. They understand it. Even at the age of 4, toning with kids that are 4, 5, 6 years old, they get the energy of the word. You don't even have to explain what it means when we tone. They just want to feel it. And they can. And I'll have kids tone like an Aramaic word from the teachings of Jesus, and then I'll say, how does that feel? And they'll usually tell me something that's really close to what the word actually means. And that's pretty profound. That's a very profound experience. And I'm really excited for the future because it's, wow, just knowing what 10, 20 years down the road, just, you know, who could have thought 20 years ago that we'd have meditation and Reiki, not even physically touching, you know, hands off of a human body in hospitals in the United States of America. That's a huge quantum leap. So just imagine 20 years down the road and 30 and 40 for the future generations if we just continue to do the work and just each of us take care of our own little piece. It's the only way the system's going to work. So I'm just thankful I'm in the middle of that.
Yeah, and you look at the resistance because of what's in those stacked boxes, so to speak, of the old insanity, the resistance to something new coming in. I know we had a nurse at our an intensive at Hartley, and this goes back probably 15 years ago, and most of the nurses in the hospital she worked in were studying Barbara Brennan's work on hands-on healing. And the administrator of the hospital became so enraged over this that he actually, this nurse shared, that he actually posted a sign in the nurse's lounge that said, "There will be no healing in this hospital."
Wow.
Wow. You know, and of course, meaning, you know, none of his hands on it. We're not. You're not a healer. You're supposed to give pills, don't you know? And that old resistance, that old stuff that's held in. And you know, as I was given this visual, as I was working with this person this morning, of these stacked boxes, this vertical stacking of the generations, and you think about that, and that gives a whole new meaning to the Tower of Babel. Babel that comes out of the hatred of great, you know, 40 generations back grandfather. The Babel of grandmother in her pain at losing a child. The Babel of the child that is in, you know, in trauma and pain at having been hit and beaten. You know, all of these things become the energies that when a certain experience shows up, it resonates everything stacked in the boxes, and everything that comes out of that vertically stacked generational pattern is Babel. And to be able to forgive that, to remove that, and to bring truth and the active presence of love into that, you know, and as you're saying, as a parent, every parent gets the opportunity. Their unconscious mind is hanging out there with their children. Everything they've never dealt with, the child is going to resonate out of their stacked boxes. And am I available? And, you know, this is kind of what the Monday show has become about. I didn't know whether we mentioned that to you or not, but Monday is now Parent Teacher Talk Mondays. And we've got Suzanne Tucker, who's doing conscious parenting in St. Louis and bringing the tools into conscious parenting classes. And so that's become the whole conversation. And when we, you know, when our babble comes forward in the presence of our children, because they're conceived out of the same set of boxes we came in with, and they're going to tend to express them. Can I truly bring the active presence of love when I have this stacking of four generations back rage and guilt, and my son brings forward that rage and guilt out of his resonance, and we start bouncing off of each other? Can I actually be the space where the active presence of love shows up? I remember Michael Jay was about probably 8 years of age, and he was having some conflict with his sister, as you're describing with your kids, and it was fun. It was to the point where, like, you know, I'm holding my breath and I'm ready to blow my stack, and I grab him by the shoulders like, "Kid, we're going to go upstairs and we're going to have a talk. It's time for this to change." And so we get upstairs and Michael Jay says, "Oh, you mean, Dad, like you say in the workshops, I'm resonating something in you that you haven't dealt with yet?"
Hello, Michael Jay. That's great.
Let me wring his neck. And I stopped and I took a breath, and my 8-year-old son processed me through it. And it was so empowering and so powerful for him. And I've talked to him about it, and he doesn't remember this, but it was just so awesome, because when he finished processing me around that, he then started to share some things that he had never shared with anybody. And he was about 8, and he went back to being about 3, and a tremendous guilt that he held was that he had hit his mother. And so he then started to talk about how he had hit his mother and what his feelings were about that. You know, it just opened such a space for him then to go back and deal with something. And as he processed through that, he's, you know, he's 8, and he's got enough awareness of the tools. He says, "Dad, I'm going unconscious. I need to breathe." And he lays down, he goes into the still point breath and processes that. And so it's just so awesome to just watch how it happens and how those generations can give us such gifts.
I used to love observing Michael Jay back in 95 at Heartland, because he was like a fly on the wall. He would be around a lot, and I would see different people, processing things. And you know how people say one thing, and you know that what's actually inside is not what they're saying out on the outside, of course. And I would just watch him, just sort of just be aware of the people around him. And he always had this really sort of I don't know if sly is the word, but this smile of knowing, like, hey, I understand exactly what's going on right now between these people. And it was always really neat to see him and to see his expressions because, yeah, I mean, you've got great kids. I haven't seen either of them in a few years, but, you know, it's pretty amazing. And Mikey, like my son Mikey, he's a feeler. Everything is, you know, on the level of feel. And I've learned over the years that, number one, to allow him to just let him talk, let that keep coming. One of the things that I started doing a few years ago was to, of course, you know, being aware of my own breath, you know, breathing, letting myself feel what's happening for me and letting that flow through the system. But I would actually just lean against him. And it was almost like literally sitting here on the couch, well, right now next to the French Broad River in Asheville, but you know, I would just sit on the couch or in a chair and just lean slightly next to him and just pay attention to my breath, and it would just unlock for him, you know, to hold that space. And it was like, wow. And it takes me back to when I was that age and the things that I didn't know anything about any of this. And, of course, it was the 70s and the 80s, and it was, you know, just, well, by the 80s, it was the me decade, you know, don't feel anything, just charge forward at full speed. And the 70s were like, do whatever you want, you know, consume it all, eat it all, do it all. And, you know, even at a young age then, I still was, you know, feeling those waves of energy, you know, mixed in the middle of all of that kind of stuff. And it's funny that, you know, in hindsight, you look back 30 years ago, and, you know, it's so easy to forget that that rawness of, like, say, the puberty years for children, like with Mikey and Lucinda, it's really easy to forget what we went through because it seems so far in the past. But yet, when we're fully present with them in this moment right now with what they are going through, anything that we haven't processed in relation to that, either in exact relation in fidelity with it or exact opposite with it, is going to come resonating and it's going to come out of my system. And, yeah, rather than me pointing it back at them, which is, of course, that such a knee-jerk reaction to do, but instead to be responsible and able to respond. And it doesn't work perfectly it works perfectly every time if I actually do it, but sometimes when a lot of that stuff's resonating all at once, like I said, that to me is the real classroom. It's not about being up on a mountain or pulling away from society. If people want to do that, sure, that's fine, and I'm sure that's a great thing to do. But at some point, if you don't come back into society, you don't even know if you've grown because you have nothing to measure that by. And to me, the real work is in the family unit. It's not that I'm able to be up in front of 1,000 people, you know, talking about what I think I know or, you know, in any way, even doing processing in front of a bunch of people. But it's about, you know, what happens at home when the door closes and, you know, and the public is not there. And it's just, it's us and it's the family unit. That's when you're able, you know, that self-testing that we were talking about several months ago on the show, it's those moments when you gauge, if you're open enough to gauge that situation and say, hey, let's look at this, you know, how much have we grown? And also, of course, you know, what else is there? Of course, what more growth is there to do, which, of course, is a quite a long road. And that's that benefit, again, of saving worksheets because I really got that the first summer at Heartland, doing 5, 6, 7, in some cases 15 worksheets in a day. I'll admit there was a couple days that were more like 2 or 3, but I didn't say that. But to look back and go, oh, my God, why was that an issue? And you almost laugh at it like, oh, my God, I had an issue with that? And that's the way it works. That's the beauty of it is to realize, hey, guess what? If you keep pulling that junk out of the system, it's going to keep functioning more and more efficiently, and all of a sudden you're going to get more mileage out of that system, and you're going to feel more presence, you're going to feel more peace, you're going to feel more joy, and you're going to feel more love, and all of those things that you're feeling are not outside of you. Those are your true essence, especially when your true essence is not doesn't have all kinds of stuff piled on top of it, of all kinds of biases, hatred, criticism, fear, hostility, judgment, and all that stuff that we... what I call in my Lord's Prayer translation, our hidden past. I say, release my hidden past as I cancel my past concerns with others and wholly release me from the errors of my perception. And that's it. If we can just, and that's what shabuk means. Shabuk means to remove the goal for this present moment so that I can just be fully in the moment. But it means to truly, literally remove the goal, not like, as I said, detach, push it away, but rather to actually step directly into it and allow it to breathe, allow it to process, and then to literally remove it from the system. That's what it's about, you know? You got a bad guitar string, don't wobble on it. What's that?
Unload the driver.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you got like a guitar and you've got...
Unload that goal, which is currently driving perception, that is in error, that is has hostility and fear.
Well, that's always been the great, yeah, when you talk about like the printer, et cetera, and of course you got a corrupt driver, take the thing out. And I was saying like the wobbly, you got a really bad wonky guitar string that you can't seem to keep in tune, take the thing off and put a new one on, for God's sake. You know, it kind of makes a lot more sense than trying to keep playing it and wobble it around and retune it 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 and retune it. You'd think, okay, wait a second, maybe if I just removed it, maybe that would actually make sense. And it does.
And it gives a whole new perspective, or at least reminds us of the understanding of that Aramaic phrase that the Greeks translated as, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother, and that the heart is that dissociated mind or that unconscious, that stack of boxes from the generations, and that our work is to go in and remove those things which we just used to build our brain's picture of our brother, to create this image of my brother as, well, you know, you make me so angry because you really have a problem, and, you know, what's wrong with you? And the, of course, the anger I'm feeling is coming from the stack boxes in my own mind, and until I remove what I put into my brain's image of my brother, I think my brother's the problem. And, you know, until I get that and start to forgive, start to remove from my stacked boxes, my heart, my unconscious, that which I think is your problem, then I'm not free. And, you know, it just takes things to a whole new level.
You know, there's a huge differentiation that I got from you, but it was actually several years after hearing Why Again, I don't even know how many times, probably dozens of times between the DVD and live and the CDs, and that was how most people, when they think of that word, that word projection or to project, they're thinking that it's almost like you're hurling your thing onto the person in front of you, you're projecting it onto them, and it was something that I didn't really see the fidelity in what you were saying until many, many, many times after the first hearing of, it's not that you're projecting it onto them. What you're actually doing is projecting it into your mind's vision or your mind's identity of who that person is in front of you, to the point where it's not outside of you, it's inside of you so intimately that you can't even see between the inside and the outside. You're literally looking at yourself while you're looking at them. And it was something that took me a few years before. I remember that moment. As a matter of fact, it was in Oy vey. It was actually at Jubilee in Asheville, maybe 7 years ago, and of course I was sitting in the back, and it clicked, and I went, whoa, hold on, you know, and I'd heard it, you know, who knows how many times I'd heard it at that point, and I'd even been teaching it at that point, and it really went, whoa, and I remember that moment, and I got the lump in my throat, and I started breathing, and I remember distinctly because you had said, you know, don't start doing your worksheet, you know, wait for me, because people were starting to do it, and they were starting to go ahead, and I just started doing the worksheet, and I'm like, well, good, this is why I'm sitting in the back, so I can do it and not be bothered by it. But yeah, and I just went through the whole worksheet, and I was like, wow, and I remember that the thing that was a miracle about it was I didn't do that worksheet about, it wasn't even actually bad, it was like I was processing this, allowing myself to process the joy that was released when I removed the bushel baskets off of what I thought projection meant. It was actually, rather than me trying to process out something bad, I was allowing myself to feel joy, which is something that a lot of us, you know, a lot of people have, you know, sure, they can wallow in, you know, all kinds of weird dark stuff all the time, but to be able to actually do a worksheet that was almost giving myself permission to shine and allowing myself to feel the joy, which took me into more worksheets that lasted for several weeks. I remember this so clearly because, like, even from the time I was a child, for some reason, I think it was right around the time when my parents were just starting to get divorced, which kind of drug on for a while, not a pleasant experience for a five-year-old. And a lot of times when I felt joy, when I would actually feel like I was really starting to be wide open, I felt sort of a smackdown. And I don't know that people were intentionally smacking me down. Just at the age of five, that's what was happening in my head. Oh, I'm getting smacked down. I'm not supposed to be happy. So I just went into that morbid mode, and it was something that I didn't unlock until I was well into my 30s, right there in Jubilee, and then again over the course of a few days. So it was by actually doing a worksheet on something that was like, wow, I feel joy here, and something that, you know, we would call positive, that unlocked all these other layers underneath it. It was a really, it was a whole new experience for me. And to realize that, of course, you know, that magic of you can hear the same thing 1,000 times, but it doesn't mean you've ever actually heard it. So just because it goes into your ear doesn't mean you're comprehending it.
Exactly. And again, Yeshua says, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. You've got to build the brain cells. And, you know, the thing you remind me of with what you just said is the, for me, the idea that the popular culture, the world has a cheap copy of everything that's real in the spiritual dimension. And we get, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the cheap copy and the real thing. And so the world teaches us, you know, psychology teaches that projection is, you know, I've got something inside of me and I put it outside of me on you, when that's the cheap copy. The real thing is when I literally build a world of pictures out of the content of my own vertical generational stacking of boxes. And I think that the picture my mind is showing you, the body my mind is showing you, is actually you, when it's just a picture in my mind. You can't see a body in the world because there's no such thing as a body in the world. There is no matter. Matter doesn't exist. We make this whole picture world up, and it looks solid, and it looks physical, and it looks the way our stacked boxes hold it, rather than getting the opportunity to visit what's actually there. And when I engage in first century Aramaic forgiveness, I collapse the output of those boxes, and I get maybe at first just a fraction of a second of the direct experience of what the Creator has set up for us. I get the direct taste of the truth of who I am and who this person is before me. And as I allow that to expand, as I choose, and that's why when somebody comes to Heartland to an intensive, we make the request for 5 worksheets a day, because when you're consistently doing that, bang, 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 collapsing that, then you start to get a taste of the actuality of what the Creator created, instead of this hypnotic belief in the hatreds, the fears, the angers, the griefs, the rages, the doctrines, the dogmas of the past, and you get a live experience. And a personal experience, personally experienced, goes light years beyond believing in what somebody else did. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, you mentioned faith earlier, why I, for there are a lot of people who are very skeptical, saying, well, don't believe a word we're saying. Don't, you know, none of what I'm saying is true about the actuality anyway. Don't believe a word. Just take the tool and put it to work and watch what happens in your life. No belief required. Just test it. Just put the pen to the paper and try it and watch what happens when you start collapsing the output of those vertically stacked boxes of the generations and get free of it. And, wow, when you do that, everything shifts and everything changes.
Mm. And to be at Heartland with the raw, I was just talking about Heartland, about the amazing summer experiences. Loretta and I were talking on the way back home here, and it's amazing to be there with all that, with the whole raw food, and it's and to be on the support team as I was that first year. And there's like, I could say it with a smile on my face now. Although I don't know that I had a complete smile on my face then, which is like there's nowhere to hide, because those to have those live raw enzymes going into you, you know, on a daily basis, all the fresh juice and the pure water, and all of these amazing sprouts and all this raw food, lots of salad and watermelon and fruit and vegetables, and to have all this going into the system, that builds the system up. But of course, the higher the vitality goes, the more stuff is allowed to come up. And it's amazing, because especially being on the support team, if I had a moment, you know, that I'd sort of be off in the corner somewhere and something would be happening, I could turn almost in any direction and someone would literally even people that I hardly even knew would come up and say, you know, I would love to help you process whatever's happening for you right now. And it was just such an amazing experience. And then I also remember, and I've talked to you about this before, how I'm not sure how far into it we were, maybe like 5 weeks into it. I was only sleeping like 2.5 to 3, most 4 hours a day, and also doing like back-breaking work. Let's drop that one. Very, you know, strenuous work. It was amazing that I had never up to that point, you know, except maybe going back to when I was a child, felt so alive and so awake. And yet still, when people started talking about, hey, there's this great buffet down the road, down on the lake, you know, great place called Cookies, which of course you know very well. And we go down to this buffet, and I'm like, oh, there's salad. And I'm like, oh, look, they have spaghetti. And I hadn't had something like that. And at that point, actually about 2 months. And I still remember literally the first forkful of that stuff, which to me tasted like nothing else than acidy raging salt. The first forkful of that stuff that went to my mouth, because I had my salad with nothing on it, although it was bizarre because you can smell the chemicals, but I didn't put any dressing on it. But that first forkful of the that spaghetti, literally, it was like my system just like shut down. Like somebody just took the car from, you know, going in fifth and just threw it into neutral and then just let it come to a coast and, you know, stall on the side of the road. Literally in a matter of seconds, it was almost instantaneous. It was amazing how quick that locked down.
And maybe even just popped it into reverse while you're doing 70 down the highway. Yeah.
Which is what it really felt like.
Yeah. And many people don't realize that, you know, it's interesting that the food program has developed so much. You know, and we're actually just getting ready. We're finishing off the new recipes book, maybe a couple of hundred recipes. But, you know, they're doing total fresh and raw, and they're awesome spaghetti and meatballs, veggie burgers, and portobello mushroom sandwiches, you know, done with the dehydrator. And just, I mean, there's so many things that's being done with the food. And, you know, last year we had a couple of meat eaters there, and they're like, man, if I could eat like this all the time, I'd never put another dead animal in my mouth. If I could do this at home. And of course, that's why part of the experience of the intensive is for people to get the opportunity to put their hands on the food. And, you know, that in itself vitalizes and, you know, all the factors that it takes to open the space. Most people sitting at home, you know, that can turn to their cup of coffee and to their white bread and their sugar-laced, you know, soda will not do what it takes to bring the factors in that vitalize them and empower them sufficiently to heal. And, you know, one of the things we do in an intensive is every factor in the last 45 years of studying this, my study has been, what are the factors? What does it take to step into the healing process? And you never know from one person to another. You know, for one person, it might be, you know, the energy field work done on them during this breath session opens their antenna, which is the bony structure, the head, the spine, and the pelvis, and that might be what just creates the major breakthrough. It might be the next forkful of high enzyme, high energy, fresh and raw food, and when it goes into the mouth, all of a sudden that energy just, bang, creates a whole other level of vitality, and then all hell breaks loose because what needs to be dealt with now surfaces. And so having the support, as you say, there's always someone there. That's one of the awesome things about Heartland. You're walking down the road and, you know, and there's Julie there to support you, and you're walking up the road and there's Jeannie walking down the road, or there's Judy, and, you know, that there are people that are just in that space doing the work with you, just open something that you can't recreate at home in your regular environment with your regular distractions and your regular drugs and, you know, all the things that people do. So somebody who might want to take your work to the next level, you might want to check on the website at www.whyagain.org and take a look at the summer schedule. We're actually doing, you know, Ari called in yesterday. We're doing a 10-day food fund forgiveness and work program. That'll be the first thing we do. It'll start on July 7th and go through the 18th, and then we'll move into, or the 17th, I think it is, and then we'll move into a new intensive we're doing is codependence to interdependence and a communication practicum. And we're putting that together, two different workshops in a 16-day format. And that one's going to be, I think, a real gangbuster this year. And then, of course, we'll do the 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and then teacher training, Laws of Living. So that schedule is has it set up. And if anybody's ready to take it to the next level, we did have a Jean, go ahead.
Rex is on the line, and he says he has a question for you all. We're down to about 9 minutes.
Let's go for it. Rex, how do you be, sir?
I'm doing great. Enjoying the conversation.
Cool.
I have a very quick question. I don't know how quick the answer will be. The question's going to be quick. Because I hear Dale say words that are different, and when I've been really working on the Lord's Prayer, well, they sound different, Dale, and I hear Michael say certain words that sound different. Forgive is such an important word in the teachings that we are doing as teachers and also students. In the Lord's Prayer, it's washbuch, and it's also shabuk, and it's also shabag. And I wonder if there's a tense, or what exactly is that? Maybe you could clarify that for me.
Well, shabuk is in the imperative sense. What that would be, that would be the word forgive. Shabag would be forgave, or basically past tense. So shabuk is imperative, as in forgive, and then shabag is essentially forgave. But some shabuk will show up. You know, the word forgive shows up in the middle of other words, like in the word glory, for thine is the power and the glory. It's in the middle of that word. Shabuk is in the middle of teshbukta, which means that glory only happens when you forgive. It only happens when you remove the root of your suffering in this present moment. It's actually in, I believe, four different places in the Lord's Prayer. That's one of my most fascinating, fun things to do in my work, is to find where roots pop up in different words, because it really unlocks, like, wow, people don't realize it, you know, in the colloquial words as things are translated as, in the words of Jesus, they don't realize that Aramaic is so high fidelity and just fundamentally simple. It's a puzzle language. It's very much a building block language. And it's one of the biggest problems many scholars have, is they just can't get past the colloquial level of the words, meaning the common everyday translations, and they can't bring it all the way home. They don't understand the roots strong enough, you know, what those root sounds are, and how they basically, not basically, they literally build the words from the root sounds. You've got a really good eye, ear, I should say.
Yes, and also washbuk is another form of that then.
Yeah, there's washbuk, there's washwachan, there's teshbukta. It's in several forms just in the Lord's Prayer alone. So obviously, if he's going to use the word four times in one prayer, it's a pretty important word, I would say.
Cool. Well, I just keep building brain cells. I'm really enjoying it.
Cool. But one of the other things I think is important to get is, you know, Yeshua gives us an instruction that says, don't stand on the street corner and say your words. Don't be known for your much speaking. And it's not about repeating words. When you get to the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, it's a set of instructions. It's how to. You know, when they said, teach us to pray, remember the Aramaic meaning of the word prayer is to set a trap for God. So what they were saying is, teach us how to be the active space of love in the world to bring healing. They weren't saying, give us a set of words to say. I mean, he specifically says, don't do the word thing. And, you know, here we are with the cheap copy 2,000 years later, and everybody gets up every Sunday morning in church, generally speaking, and says, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, as though this is a prayer. Prayer is to set a trap for God, to literally fulfill your purpose as a human form, to be the space where the active presence of love shows up 24/7, 365. I can remember being a kid and being told, there'll come a time when your whole life will become a prayer. And what prayer meant to me was down on your hands and knees, down on your knees with your hands folded. It's like, all I could imagine of that was square knees. My whole life is going to become that. Now I understand that what he was saying is you're going to get to the point where you will be the active presence of love 24/7, 365. By the way, here's the instruction. They said, well, hey, Yeshua, how do we do that? He says, okay, here's how you do it. First of all, you acknowledge and honor the source of creation, and you choose to emulate that source of creation. Creator, birther, parent to us all, teach us to honor, to worship, to serve you. And worship there is to emulate you. Hallowed be thy name. Honor the energetic presence of the active presence of love. So he's giving us an instruction set for how to be this active space of love. And of course, as you say, the root of forgiveness is in there four times. Big part of the process is to remove what's in the stack boxes that never belong, you know, to remove those generational influences that bring other frequencies, other energies into our presence so that we have difficulty seeing past them. We have difficulty seeing past our projections until we forgive, until we collapse those projections, pretending that everybody else is the problem. So an important instruction set to get.
And it's in conjunction with what you're saying, I believe it is supporting what you're saying. My experience was when I first heard the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, I felt deeply moved energetically. And then when I started practicing saying it, although I wasn't saying it, you know, ideal because it was brand new, it was a language that, you know, just learning, starting. And what I found was I would just have this tremendous experience, but I wouldn't have a linear understanding of the words at all. I didn't even know what they meant, other than, you know, our Father, heart in heaven, because I was raised a Catholic and I knew those words, but they did not have the same energetic impact. So I got to experience the energy of what I would say presencing love in me by vibrationally working with a prayer, and now I'm going back and learning the words, which is, I think it's a really powerful way of learning something. So I'm enjoying it.
For sure. Beautiful. And I think the Aramaic is the only language that isn't Babel. Aramaic is the direct language from the Creator, and that's why we get that energetic experience, because it is literally an energetic reflection of the actuality of the creation, rather than something made up out of the vertically stacked boxes from 1,000 generations of Babel.
Mm.
So thank you, Rex. We appreciate you and what you're doing in the prison there. And Jeannie tells me that we've got another caller. We're down to about 2 minutes, so if a caller can pop in quickly and tell us what you have on your mind, we'll see what we can do with it.
And before I turn them on, also Julie says she's got room for one more person to ride with her from Ashland to Portland on Sunday for the workshop, and she wanted to give out her phone number, 541-261-7949, or you can contact us and we'll get you in touch with her. So our next caller, and we are down to 2 minutes, 509, you're on the air.
This is Nisa from Richland.
You're welcome.
Hello, I saw you guys when you were there a couple weeks ago.
Awesome,
and
how can we support you?
Well, in terms of love relationships being based on matching bags of garbage, I'm wondering, I'm in a relationship and definitely have identical bags of garbage, and I'm wondering, how do you know from this point forward if you're in the right relationship or not?
Well, I'll give you a short answer, and then maybe we could start out actually Tuesday's show. We're not going to do parent-teacher talk on Monday. We're actually going to do a Memorial Day show, but maybe Tuesday we could start out. But my input would be, instead of trying to figure it out, which is what the non-being mind is always trying to do, what you do is you allow whatever that relationship is bringing up for you to come to awareness, embrace it in the active presence of love, dissolve it through forgiveness, and you reach the next level of your own healing. And every relationship is a gift to give you that experience, and I would love to talk about it more on Tuesday, if that works for you to call into the show first thing. That would be fabulous.
Sure thing.
All right. We appreciate you and everybody. You know, Sunday, if you're in Portland area, we're going to be at Tabor Space doing codependence to independence from 1 till 3, till 4, pardon me, 1 till 4 o'clock. And Julie is in Ashland, Oregon. She's got the space for somebody to drive up. There's a carload coming. We'll look forward to seeing you. Give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Give them the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.